Now, to the remote, dense rainforests of West Papua, where two species of marsupial made big scientific news this week. Huge scientific news. Scientists and local elders have identified a species of ring-tailed glider and a very unusual long-fingered possum that were thought to have been extinct for 6,000 years. It's a Lazarus moment for the research team that has been working in the remote Vogelkopf Peninsula, an area that was once connected to Australia. Professor Tim Flannery, who is a distinguished visiting fellow at the Australian Museum, has been leading the research. Professor Tim Flannery, thanks so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
It's a great pleasure, Nick.
This really is a big scientific discovery, a case of what's called Lazarus taxa. Tell us about the meaning of that phrase and give us a sense of how big a deal this is.
Well, look, Lazarus, as you know, was raised from the dead, I think, after 4 days by Jesus, according to the New Testament. And the term has become used in biology to mean species that have been thought to be extinct and then have been found as living organisms. So in biology generally, a period of about 50 years has to lapse before a species is considered extinct. And sometimes in the 51st year, it's discovered to be alive, often never, of course. But in the case we're dealing with here, the two species that we discovered, they've been thought to be extinct for 6,000 years. So that's quite a different Lazarus from the one who's just been gone for a few years.
So this is huge.
It really is huge. It really is. And to make it even huger, really, you know, one of the two species is a new genus. And the last new genus of marsupial to be named from New Guinea was way back in 1937. So, you know, from a lot of perspectives, this is big news.
For the uninitiated, what is a new genus?
Well, we are in the genus Homo, you know, and the chimpanzees are in the genus Pan. Imagine if a new genus or a new organism was found that sat halfway between us and chimpanzees. You know, it'd be a new genus if it was sufficiently distinct. So genus is a group of organisms that share characteristics that maybe evolved, you know, 10 million years ago.
I'm going to get you to do the introductions, Tim. Tell us first of all about the pygmy long-fingered possum.
Well, that particular animal is such a beautiful little thing. I'll just describe it physically first. You know, it could sit in the palm of your hand. It weighs about 200 grams, so that's about twice as big as a sugar glider, most people are familiar with from Australia. It's boldly striped in black and white. Its ring finger on each hand, so the fourth digit, is over twice as long as all the other digits. It really is an uncanny looking thing like that. It's got very powerful jaws for ripping open logs. So the way it lives is it listens for insect larvae burrowing their way through timber. And when it hears insects, it uses its teeth to rip a hole in the timber to expose the burrow that the little creature's moving through. And then it uses its finger to fish out those insect larvae and feed on them. So it's a very specialised organism.
And that's what the long finger is for?
It is, and it's unique in the world of mammals, having such a disproportionately long finger.
And up until now, we've only known about this animal through 6,000-year fossils.
Yes, in fact, just really one fossil. My dear friend, Ken Applin, who I would say the only true genius I've ever known. You know, we went through university together and always had immense respect for him. He was given the task of analysing hundreds of thousands of bone fragments from a series of caves in West Papua. And among them all, he fished out one fragment that could have sat on the nail of my pinky finger. It was so small. And said to me, oh, this is, you know, this is a new kind of mammal. You know, and I looked at it and I said, Ken, are you, I guess you're right, but like it's beyond my pay grade to confirm it. Anyway, he found that and then the other, a fragment about the same size of the ring-tailed glider. And he published these in 1999 and people were so perplexed. I think no one knew really what to do with it because they were so out of place, both of these animals.
Well, hold that thought because I want to talk about the process which led to this discovery, the expeditions that led to this discovery, because that is an extraordinary story. But you mentioned there the ring-tailed glider, and tell us about that animal.
Well, that its nearest relative is the greater glider, which is one of Australia's most charismatic mammals. The ring-tailed glider is about half the size of the smallest greater gliders, but it's every bit as cute looking. You know, it weighs about 300 grams. It uses tree hollows. It looks a bit like a small lemur. The face is very very lemur-like. It's a very attractive little animal, very fluffy, and it glides just as the greater glider does. But in addition to that, it has this tremendously strong tail that it uses as it leaps about to anchor itself in the branches of the forest.
And I understand that for indigenous people in West Papua, the ringtail glider is a sacred creature.
For some tribes, it absolutely is. And before we realised this, we were wondering why we had such difficulty getting information about the animal. But it turns out that it's so sacred in some areas that people dare not even mention its name. They'll just refer to that animal. And we finally found a very an elder who was in his 80s, who'd grown up before contact with the outside world, because that only happened in the 1960s in this part of Papua, who was full bottle on the whole thing. And he was the one who, you know, basically told us enough of the story to make sure we didn't ask any more questions.
On ABC Radio National, I'm Nick Bryant, and I'm speaking with Professor Tim Flannery from the Australian Museum about the discovery of these two species that we thought had been extinct for 6,000 years. Tell me about that journey of discovery, Tim, because it took you into some interesting terrain.
Oh, me and my colleagues, both of us. Where could I begin? I think we've talked about the fossils. So let's move forward to about 2015. Mm. So logging is going ahead in the Vogel Kop. There was a forestry worker, just a humble Javanese forestry worker, who was taking photographs of some of the animals that were appearing as the forests were felled. And he took a photo of an animal he didn't recognise. Took about 7 years for it to reach my colleague, Professor Chris Helgen, now at the Bishop Museum in Hawaii. But when he got it, he sent it through to me and just said, do you think this could be this thing that Ken described as a fossil all these years ago? We both looked at it and puzzled and said, oh, maybe. It's certainly something different. So then fast forward to 2022, when I was lucky enough to go to the island of Mysol off the coast of the Vogel Kop and interviewed local people about various animals, and they seemed to know this animal. So I then helped fund a colleague from the University of Papua, Dr. Johanita, to go back to Mysol and do some work. And she spent a couple of weeks there, talked to people again. They knew the animal, but we couldn't get any photos or any information. And then finally, a year after that, in September 2024, a local villager who'd worked with us both, Mr. Marnik, sent a photograph through to Aksamina, Johanita, of this animal. Says, is this what you're looking for? And of course it was. And he did a very professional job. He did it almost like a scientist would do. The animal on a leaf showing both sides. Tremendous. That was the proof we needed. So from there, the story's accelerated and we've found more evidence of the animal and more photographs and so forth.
So there was a eureka moment.
Kind of. It was a semi-eureka moment, I think, is the way, because we thought we knew what we had, but we didn't really, you know what I mean? It's kind of, you know, the first photograph was of a juvenile and not a very high quality image, so it was very hard to be certain. But over time, we got more and more certain.
What struck me about the story of this discovery was that it was the coming together of a kind of academic approach with indigenous knowledge. It was very much a collaboration.
Look, it absolutely is a collaboration involving many, many people now. And I could just point out Professor Chris Helgen at the Bishop Museum, absolutely integral to the whole thing. Dr. Johanita, Eric Maynard, who passed the photograph on to Chris. There's so many people. Lucas Congolis from the Australian Museum, who identified some of the subfossil material we've used subsequently. There's dozens of us. And that's the nature of science these days.
And I understand that these two animals, the pygmy long-fingered possum and the ring-tailed glider, do have a relationship with mammals in Australia.
Well, this is the truly astonishing thing. A colleague of ours called Scott Hucknall, he was digging some caves in kind of central Queensland, Mount Etna Caves, they're called, and he found fossils of both of those species in his deposits. And those deposits are about 280,000 years old. So what that tells us is that the ringtail glider and the pygmy long-fingered possum were both living in Australia at least until 280,000 years ago and probably much longer after that. So that was hugely exciting to me.
And Tim Flannery, having discovered that these mammals still exist, is there a fear that they could soon become extinct? And if so, how do you go about protecting them and what threats are posed to them?
Nick, if we hadn't made these discoveries and there was just a business-as-usual approach to logging and so forth, I think that these species would go extinct. But now we have discovered them. We have a pathway through to protecting them. And Indonesia is much like Australia in the terra nullius, in that, you know, the vacant crown land was what most of this land was considered. Australia's brought in Mabo legislation. Indonesia has brought in Hutan Adat legislation to help local clans claim their forest back. So we are helping the local clans where this animal survives to claim back their forestry rights, and then helping in collaboration with them to set them on a developmental pathway of sustainable development and conservation. So, you know, the Global Wildlife Fund and the Mindaroo Foundation in Australia are both really backing that project. The Catholic Church is part of it. The University of Papua is part of it. The local clans and communities and their organisations are all part of it.
It's fascinating to hear the story of discovery. It's lovely to be introduced to these animals that I guess most listeners had never even heard of. I wonder if there's a broader significance of what you've done here.
Well, look, I think there is. The broader significance is that, you know, that Vogelkop we now know was part of Australia, and it has unique links with Australia that the rest of New Guinea doesn't have. The thing that inspires me, though, Nick, you know, is can you imagine going from knowing an animal from a little brownish bone fragment that had fit on the nail of my pinky finger through to seeing an image of the living animal that you thought was extinct along with the diprotodons and everything else? I mean, it was a moment for me of incredible revelation. I'll never forget it as long as I live. And, you know, I'd love to inspire more younger people to get involved in this work. It is hard. It's difficult and complex, but it's immensely rewarding.
What you're describing is not just a scientific discovery. It's almost a spiritual discovery.
It feels that way for me, yeah. And especially with that first photograph turned up a week after Ken Applin, the great pioneer of this field, had passed away. So I felt almost as if Ken was reaching out to me and Chris and giving us a gift. It is a spiritual animal, according to the clans and somehow according to me.
Where does it rank in your experience of science and discovery?
Oh, my goodness. I've never experienced anything like it, really. You know, the last time a new genus of mammal was described for New Guinea was 1937. So I feel like here I am at this moment of immense revelation. And, yeah, you realise it is one of those moments in your life you'll never forget.
I can see something that the listeners can't. There's tears in your eyes.
Yes.
Tim Flannery, you mentioned earlier about charismatic mammals. You're in that category.
I don't know about that.
Thanks for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you.
Tim Flannery, a distinguished visiting fellow at the Australian Museum. There's been a rapturous response already on the text line. I have goosebumps listening to this wonderful news about this tiny pygmy possum. Googling now made my day. Well, you don't have to Google. There's a story on the ABC News website with photos of the possum and the glider if you'd like to see what they look like. What a wonderful segment, says Barbara. Love the energy and enthusiasm from nature studiers. Tim Flannery is really one of the great communicators in science, isn't he? You're listening to ABC Radio National, Saturday Extra, with me, Nick Bryant.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.